and welcome to another edition of Turn at a Punk Footnotes. I'm one of your hosts, Damien Abraham, and your other host, Chris O'Toole. Chris, how you doing, buddy?
Good. How are you doing?
Good. I psyched you out with that one.
Yeah, it was short and sweet. I'm loving it.
Really short, really sweet this week. I'm doing okay, buddy. You know, I'm doing okay. You know, I'm just keeping on. Made some fire chicken for dinner tonight. It's incredibly spicy. One day I'll have you over and I'll try and find a vegan version of it.
Okay, nice. It's funny because I have the only member, and this isn't very surprising, but if I'm going to relate this to your band really very quickly, I just thought about you cooking for me, and this is an idea I could never have comprehended years ago. But now that Jonah is the only member of your band that's ever cooked for me.
What did he make you? Pasta?
Yeah, like some kind of variation. It was very good, though. He's an excellent cook. Yeah, just putting that out there. But yeah, so the bar is set high.
Trust me, buddy. You try this fire chicken, you'll forget Jonah's SpaghettiOs or whatever he made you.
He did not make SpaghettiOs.
You forget yeah. That Chef Boyardee that Jonah made you.
Yeah.
That Michelina's microwavable pasta that Jonah made you.
Yeah. Olive Garden takeout. Yeah.
That Olive Garden takeout that Jonah made you. My big thing in Fucked Up is that I always wanted to go to the Olive Garden. Like, that was like a thing for like 3 years. I wanted to go to the Olive Garden. And then finally, One day it like worked out that we were like had a day off and we were like, oh, let's go to the fucking Olive Garden. So we went to the Olive Garden and Jonah ordered like, you know, you go to that restaurant, you stick to the basics, right? Jonah, for some reason, orders like some fucking seafood pasta thing. And he got like deathly ill the next day.
Wow. Well, yeah, seafood's a bad, bad news.
I remember picking up one of his noodles from his past and he's like, I got like a weird cinnamon flavored noodle in my dish. Like, don't eat it.
That does not sound good.
Don't eat it anymore.
Yeah, that does not sound right. No.
Yeah. I still want
but
to
But anyway,
back.
We digressed really quickly, so maybe let's do this back on course. Get your plugs in. What do we got to do here?
You can, if you want to support this show, you can do so by subscribing to it and telling all your friends and rating it on your platform of choice. And that's the best way to do it. Thanks to Vans for all the love and support for this podcast as well. Also, Chris, 77 Fest, going to be doing some live podcasts for there. As well, we'll find out more information about that festival and stuff on Turn It A Punk this week. We're going to be talking a lot about it because Spike from Me First and the Gimme Gimmies, who are playing 77 in Montreal, will be on the show. And that's it. Find me on social media at Left for Damien. And then Chris, that's it. That's it for me. How do they get in touch with us here at this show?
So to reach us here, it's turnedoutapunkfootnotes@gmail.com.
And now we are plugged in. We are plugged up, as they say.
Yep.
You know, we've made sure that everyone's plugged in and has been given the plugs.
Yep.
As it were.
You had, off the top, just really quickly, because I don't know if you wanted to elaborate, but we have... haven't talked about record scores in a minute if you want to get into that for a little opener.
Oh, we can talk about some record stuff. I haven't been buying too much lately. I did buy 3 LPs today. yeah, but that's I'm trying to think if I bought anything else in the last few weeks. No, I think
I hadn't bought anything in a week. To the program and perhaps are aware of the theme music to the program in specific, but I secured a second test pressing of the aforementioned Bergenfield 4/7-inch a week ago.
Yeah, which is pretty wild because there's only
six.
Yeah,
so now I have 2 of the 6, but I found it. It's a long story, but it's from our our mutual friend Ian, inadvertently. But it wasn't just sent or put to anybody. It happened to be a friend of his that he gave it to. That he just, I think he just wanted to rid himself of anything that he wasn't in use of. But anyway, so it was. It's no shade thrown, is what I'm trying to say. And Ian's a lovely guy.
It's also funny when you pick up a band's like a copy of a band member's test press for super cheap, and you're like, I guess maybe I overvalue things I shouldn't. You know, like if a band member's willing to throw it away for a dollar, you know, maybe I shouldn't pay hundreds, if not thousands, for a test press.
Well, speaking of the, you know, the record buying affliction, if I were so, you know, cynical, this person just doesn't have that same affliction as you and I. So I'm assuming that, you know, although he's more than happy with the group, it's just a matter of like, yeah, I need the space. This doesn't, you know, I don't listen to this or whatever.
Yeah. How many shows do we play Burnfield for?
I don't remember. I think two.
Two. I think this was two.
Yeah, you set them up, so it's funny that you can't remember.
Well, no, one I think George set up. I think that was the show we opened for the Cancer Bats at the record release.
Okay, well, I definitely remember one you set up, and it was with, actually, if I recall, the one that you didn't just mention. There was another one with, I believe it was Paint It Black, if I'm not mistaken, and...
Cold World?
Cold World, I think, which doesn't make any sense, that bill in my mind.
You know what's going to make less sense when I tell you the other band on that bill? Diamonds.
Who? Oh, yeah, I do remember that. That's right. It was that was a 90s style bill as far as diversity is concerned.
That is definitely a 90s style bill.
Yeah. But did we not? I'm confusing because I thought there was. No, we never played with the Cro-Mags. I thought I've played with the Cro-Mags in different, and you have as well. But I thought we did some kind of weird thing with that as well. I can't remember.
I don't know. Did we get up and play in the middle of a fucked up set one time?
No, that did not happen.
Okay, that was probably
we did it. We did it at that show George kind of set up, I think.
No, that was that
with Attack and Black.
And Cancer Bats.
Yes, correct.
Yeah, that was. I think that was a Hail Destroyer release party.
Yeah, it might have been. Again, I'm foggy on all this, but yeah.
Well, Chris, you got to bone up on your Chris O'Toole history.
I'm not. Regardless. Who's on record, which I'm still very proud of, by the way. And yeah, so I scored that test press. But in addition, I scored, dare I say, a better record, the first Gruesomes single, which I was very happy to get.
What, the one that came out on what label? Primitive?
It was no longer there, or whatever. The store came first, and then the label, or vice versa. I don't know. But any Montreal heads, email us if you listen. But yeah, I was very happy to finally get that, as it saluted me for some time.
An incredible record. Yeah, you used to be able to. Primitive in Montreal used to have copies of it way back when. But
yeah, I would imagine.
That label, yeah. Primitive Records out of Montreal, very cool label.
Primitive, yeah, excellent store.
Excellent
the time
store.
I visited. But I don't know. We should probably just look that up right now. But I don't know if it's still going.
It moved locations.
Yeah.
And maybe changed names.
Okay.
But I'm not 100% sure if it's still going.
Yeah, well, it's saying, at least based on a very quick web search, it seems to have not be going anymore.
Okay.
But then again, people may know what it may have morphed into. But anyway, when it existed, very, very cool store, especially if you liked, you know, like garage-related type things. It had all the stuff, but it was, yeah, you could find a lot of great stuff like that.
Yeah, no, and definitely, they put out also, I think it's the first, but it might be a later record by our favorites, the Spaceships.
Yeah, of course, yep. Which would make sense, of course, being from Montreal, yep. But yeah, very cool label. And it's just one of those things nowadays that you don't stumble across very often, especially in these parts. So I was very happy to find it.
Yeah, it's weird how, you know, there's some records that you see, and you just put off buying it, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh shit, that's now like a very rare record, and I'm never going to get it.
I find for me, like the Canadian stuff, obviously you and I both being Canadian, I just find that's the stuff I fear is going to all of a sudden either like I can't find, because living here I have trouble finding some of it. So I can't imagine being outside. I don't think I'd have a better chance. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's weird how Canadian records don't. Well, you know, it's probably the same way with any city and with like the big name records from these cities. But like Canadian records don't really turn up anymore. Like rare. Mm-hmm. Like used to be, you'd see the Teenage Head at first LP like all the fucking time.
Yeah. And that's now, one that. Yeah, sorry.
No, no, I haven't seen one in forever. Like, you know, for cheap.
Yeah, I think since his passing, I think those records have come a little more like you can still find them a lot. They tend to be pricier, but yeah, you're right. I don't find them as nearly as much as I used to when I'm looking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've hit that point, Chris, where we're like, oh, that record, used to see that all the time. Really? Remember that?
Yeah. Regardless, but yeah, that was my that's my contribution, because you often ask me and I haven't been out or scored anything, so I figured since I actually had, I might as well put that forth.
That's awesome. I'm glad I actually got some scores today. I got the Avalanche Swiss Underground comp, like a metal kind of punk comp from Switzerland. Got a couple other, I don't know, nothing crazy lately, nothing of note. But I think that's good because I finally did my taxes, and I spent so much money in Japan, Chris.
Yeah, I know. You talked to me, and I can imagine.
It was like, I don't know what happened.
You got your scores for the year in those, whatever, 2 weeks or whatever it was, 2 weeks in total.
Yeah. Yeah, I got all of my system last year. So this year's all about a slower record buying year.
Yeah, I've had a number of friends supporting the Japanese economy lately, the last year. A lot of trips over by the record buying public, the punk record buying public more specifically. I'm surprised there are any records left is what I'm trying to say.
Also wrestling. It seems like going to Japan is, you know, more accessible now somehow. I don't know if flights have gotten cheaper or something, but like it also feels like in the wrestling world, there's just people constantly going over to Japan now for like these huge wrestling events. God, I miss it. I want to go back so bad.
Yeah.
So bad.
I can imagine. I haven't been back in 12 years. So yeah, I can imagine how you feel.
Yeah. It really is like the one place that, you know, as much as I go there, I feel like I should go there more, and I don't go there that often though. There's some people that get to go a lot. So, you know, I'm lucky though. I do get to go. So,
yeah, I would say you've been quite a bit of times that you've succeeded on your trips where I feel you should be satisfied.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely satisfied at this point, man. Now I'm doing a deep dive, unfortunately, on the, on the old Teenage Head discography page on Discogs, and it's this Blood Boogie record, which I'm like from 83. I don't think I've ever seen it.
Oh, okay. Do you have everything? I remember you had a pretty amazing Teenage Head collection from what I remember, but
I don't have
it. Do you have that new? Did you buy like? I remember you were the first person I saw that had probably the most extensive one I'd ever seen. Because people always had either one or two records that I knew, including myself. But you had, or maybe I guess you don't have the later ones. Now they look at the discography.
I have the later ones. I don't have.
You have like the one, you have Head Disorder from 96?
Yep, on CD. and I don't think it came out.
Okay, that's impressive.
Though. I don't think it ever came out on vinyl. They never got bad. You're right. They never got bad. They never got like.
Yeah.
Terrible. Like they got, you know, not as good, you know, but they never got bad.
Yeah, I agree. I'm with you.
And they're still going. They played it last weekend, I think, in Toronto, or a couple weekends ago. I couldn't go, unfortunately.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. In a different incarnation, obviously, but yeah.
Yeah. But it's still like they actually played their old high school, I saw not too long ago. I think maybe that was last weekend, which is where they first played, and I believe it was in 1975 they played their first show.
Wow.
Yeah, which is crazy.
That's weird. Yeah.
Which predates, like, you know, a lot of stuff.
Well, yeah.
Maybe 74. Maybe 74. Frankie Venom was on drums then, though. And I think in that lineup, nice. Dave Rave was the singer. So, but yeah, that's my distraction for the moment. So I'm going to get off this page, close that window, and we can start the show. Chris,
all right.
Once again, we've got to start the show by giving a bit of a eulogy of sorts. This time for one of the all-time great punk drummers, a legend, Nick Knox of the band The Cramps, of the Electric Eels, and, you know, of more as well. But those are the ones that I think, for the purposes of this show, are, you know, like those are two of the most important bands ever.
Yeah, I definitely... It's funny, in recent years, I feel like the Electric Eels are, again, that's admittedly even a band I'm not massively, I've never really like got into massively, but they're a band that seems to have gotten a little more recognition as of late. I don't know if it's because of the people like you talking about them more, what have you, in the public spectrum, but anyway, yeah, so that I feel well, that band is
excellent. That's the first punk band, right? Like, that's like... Well, this is
the argument. Sure.
That's the argument. But I think, like, you know, when you hear about them and, like, you know, like just their antics on stage, their vibe, and when you hear songs like Agitated and stuff, you're like, oh, this is exactly what everyone else was going to be doing a couple years later.
Yeah. I don't know their material to the nth degree where I can concur with you. But yeah, like, it's hard. I know of the history based on just, you know, what people like you mention and what I've read. So, but yeah, definitely a massively important group. But what's crazy is if you couple that with the Cramps, that's pretty, you know, that's a pretty outstanding pairing to be in at any point, mm-hmm. In one's career, especially if you're punk centric, whatever, interested. So yeah, big loss. He died at the age of 60, it says here. It was almost a week ago now, so by the time this comes out, it'll be a little while. But it's been circulating, so people know. But either way, it was kind of a big thing that we certainly needed to mention.
He was when he was in the Electric Eels.
Well, I would imagine, because that predates the Cramps. I would imagine that's, if I'm getting that correct, he was in it before. So yeah.
Like they're recording their single, which I'm just checking to make sure he plays on. Yeah, he was a drummer on that, of course. Is from 75 that it was recorded, right? And it says here he's born in 68. So how old does that make him? Be 20. 17.
Yeah, but if you think about it, that makes sense. You know, that 16? Tends to be the age. Yeah,
that band just sounds like so sophisticated. Maybe I just have low expectations and lowbrow tastes. But I don't know. It just seems like for that time, like they're just pushing the envelope so much further than anyone else that I would just assume they would have been, you know, seasoned rock people. But I guess, you know, that's the old man in me.
I guess. I don't know. It's, you know, I think that's what happens with age, period. But the thing I find, well, of course, amongst just that he was in these groups, but the article here, which I'm citing, is because I'm bad with what members are in what groups at what time for the most part, but it mentions that he was the drummer from 77 to 91 in the Cramps. Wow, which is early. When you think about that, like you said, their Electric Eels was, what, 75? So that was a fairly quick transition.
Mm-hmm.
But he's the first four LPs.
He's always on the
spot. And A Date with Elvis, the band's most commercially successful release, it says here, which I didn't. That's the record that is the biggest Cramps record?
Yeah. Yeah. They had kind of a hit off that, I think, in England.
I'm trying to remember the track listing on that. But anyway.
Just looking at this, so he played on all the recordings. Like, he'd never, like, when he played, like, in 77, they didn't have any recordings by that point. Like, 78's the first single.
Mm.
So he was the drummer for the run.
Yeah.
Not the original drummer, of course, but like certainly the recorded, first recorded drummer. I'm trying to think what other, see what other bands he played in. Not that he needs anything else, but.
No, yeah, of course. Regardless, it's as far as losses that people discuss and that are huge, I think this one's big. A lot of people have paid tribute, like we said, but it deserved mentioning, of course. And if our, you know, thoughts are with anyone close and what have you, friends and family.
Mm-hmm. And thank you for the music, because really, like, what a run of incredible stuff. Also passing away today, Chris, speaking of thank you for the entertainment, Big Van Vader.
I know. It's funny you mentioned, we talked earlier a bit about this, but I'd seen that as well. I kind of had a blackout, a media blackout sort of, where I hadn't, you know, been in the world looking at anything on the internet. And then that started to come up like crazy. And I thought, wow, that kind of stuff makes me feel really old. Because I remember these wrestlers as a young person, and it's crazy to think of. It makes sense, of course. They're whatever age, but I don't know. Did anyone report on what had happened? What age was he? Does anyone know?
He's older. Now I really should look it up. Like not older, but I think in his 60s. Leon White was his real name,
He was age 63. I'm just wondering here. So what I'm saying though is, at least, you know, again, it's tragic anytime, but there's a lot of, you know, really tragic wrestling stories, and he at least seems to have lived his life fairly extensively in his years, which is good. But yeah, a lot of people pay tribute to this one too.
Yeah, like back in 2016, he said that he was, you know, really facing some serious health problems, and kind of came through that. But I guess, you know, it caught up with him, unfortunately, and he passed away. And it's once again, like, yeah, someone that he was on Boy Meets World. He really was, you know, one of those wrestlers that kind of transcended just the wrestling world and became a pop culture icon. Like there's like a handful of wrestlers that you could probably put in a lineup and non-wrestling fans could probably pick them up from their other media appearances or just, like, you know, whatever's in the ether. And he is one of those guys. So yeah, sad to see him go.
Yeah, agreed. So those are two big ones recently.
Yep, two big ones. And so I guess with that, we say rest in peace. And now we have the awkward transition out of this segment.
Yeah.
Chris, should we open up that mailbag?
Yeah, sure.
Before we get to it, everyone, we are going to be talking about the Fat Tony episode. Mm-hmm. So if you haven't heard it yet, one of my favorites, go check it out. Sorry, Chris. Handing over to you on the mailbag.
No worries. Yeah. We have a couple that are the particular ones we wanted to spotlight this week. So I guess I'm not sure which one you want to delve into first, Dame. We have heart attack themed one.
Let's end with the ultimate comp thing.
Okay. Yep.
Let's start with something something easy.
All right. So the first one that is a great message, and again, we have the luxury of having some really amazing, keen listeners who really, really find the sweet spot on what we like to kind of unearth here. And this is a prime example of that. So Michael P. wrote in, and the topic is For the Nerds Heart Attack Archive. And he writes, he stumbled upon the Heart Attack Archive basically online. Not sure if that we'd had seen it. We had not. But it looks like someone put up the scans of all 50 issues. And he writes, as someone who wasn't around back then, I was alive but a really young person. It's definitely cool to see. Haven't gone through much yet, as much as I can, killing time at work. But big favorite of what he's gone through so far. So, more importantly, the URL for that is heartattackarchive.com. Now, I don't know how new this is. Maybe listeners are thinking like, yeah, I've seen this, but the webpage is actually pretty impressive. And of course, like the scans themselves are all separate, like downloadable zip files. And it's the whole issue from what I can understand here. And they have the full run, 1-50. And yeah, I even forwarded it over to you, Dame. So you took a peruse of it as well.
Yeah, no, I think it's awesome. They actually have a benefit shirt that you can buy if you would to support the archive as well. Yeah, Heart Attack is one of those zines, like Kent McClard, one of those people that, you know, I think I don't know what punk would have been like without him, because be it Ebullition or be it Heart Attack, like certainly played a key role in disseminating information about these bands and then the actual music of these bands for years, my band included. I'm sure probably your band too, Chris, as well.
No, I don't think I was in ever made. I vividly recall buying that last episode. I always say that issue when you guys were in it, and I believe I still have it.
Ebullition, yeah. Though Ebullition distribution still.
Oh, maybe that. Sorry, I thought you meant in a Heart Attack. I don't think I was any part of anything I did was ever in a Heart Attack, but I could be wrong. I don't know.
It's a fantastic zine. Like, it really is. And, like, you know, you really get to see that going back through it. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Yeah, no worries. No. But it goes to show you, too. And when you look at the beginning to, like I said, the very last issue, which features Fucked Up, which at the time was you can look at the cover of it, but I mean, just as like an example, the list of like who's on the cover, like Dead Stop, you guys, it's hard to see. I'm trying to find
Repos, your homies.
Oh, that's right. And so it gives you an idea of kind of the stuff they cover. But yeah, it was. I mean, I did not read the whole run by any means, but I have, of course, the Ebullition comp, the infamous one that has the quote, which is on the webpage of the Some Ideas Are Poisonous. So there's a lot of stuff that are of the era, I would argue, certainly, but I think it's interesting in hindsight, certainly.
And it was 50 cents or 25 cents when it first came out, you know?
Yeah.
It was definitely, you know, like, look at the, like, some of these things are amazing. Like, there's a Tear It Up Against Me split cover.
Speaking of which, yeah, friend of the show. Yeah. Actually, you've interviewed both.
Yep, but I was going to say two friends of the show. The issue right afterwards had a Pusshead interview, which is fantastic. I totally remember getting that in 2002. Submission Hold and Pez, and then, you know, other stuff as well. Like, there's really a lot of cool stuff here. The letter section was always a hilarious read, kind of always a little bit ridiculous at times too. Some amazing call outs over the years as well. I mean that in the hardcore sense, not in the present day sense.
Yes.
And it's, these are a great read. Like I didn't really appreciate Heart Attack enough at the time. You know, it was like always, you know, the butt of a lot of jokes at times for people. And I think in hardcore, certainly in the circles that I was in, but like the reality is like, what a fucking awesome zine.
I'm just looking at this now, 'cause I never realized this. Of course, I'm not surprised that there would be columns or like perhaps a show review with like a band you're in, but I'm amazed looking at issue 43 that Career Suicide's on the cover. Career Suicide beat you guys to the cover of Heart Attack? That's crazy.
Well, we played hard to
like
get.
It's not a photo. Interview.
We played hard it's to get. But they were all – people forget that Career Suicide was up and running before Fucked Up.
Like, yeah, but I'm just shocked because I even remember when you guys were on it, it was like a big deal. And then, so I'm like, wow, why didn't I remember when Career Suicide were – mentioned.
I don't know, like, that 2006 for Fucked Up, that was like Hidden World time.
Yeah.
Like, it was like, yeah, like it was, we were like stoked to be in it and stuff. But I think for us, it was, I don't know, like it was well into, I think it was after Max from Rock and Roll would stop talking about us. No, they reviewed that record. They gave it a weird, mediocre review.
Yeah. No, this is like, yeah, you're still in the pocket. You were still. Yeah.
Yeah. We're still riding the zeitgeist.
Not that your band isn't in the pocket now is not why I'm saying.
No, don't believe me, like, Chris.
That
fine.
Was still when.
we're definitely not in the Max Rock and Roll Heart Attack pocket anymore. Because that pocket's very different now.
Sure. Nonetheless, I'm just even amazed to have learned something just now. I did not realize. Issue 43 has Crew Suicide on the cover. I had no idea.
Crew Suicide is a much longer running band, more established than Fucked Up. They started, I think it was a year before us. So, you know, and that was with the original lineup, the much superior lineup, which are none of the people currently in the band.
I'm not touching that one.
I'm joking, obviously. Just messing around. Yeah, this is an amazing archive. Thank you very, very much for sending this in, because if I knew about it, I have forgotten about it. And I'm going to go through this. I've got a lot of these still in physical form at downstairs. You know, I held on to some Heart Attacks. I remember one time someone offering to give me almost a complete run of Max Rock and Rolls and almost a complete run of Heart Attacks. And I was like, nah, I don't want that.
You don't want the MRRs?
Yeah. Like,
I mean, it'd be a lot of them.
But it'd be a lot of them. And it was just like,
a lot too.
Yeah. And I don't know if they would have survived all the moves I've made. But I kind of wish I had them now.
Oh, for sure.
I don't know where they would live, like, though.
You're right. Yeah. That is a, yeah. There, yeah, you do not have a lot of room in your home.
There is some stuff, Chris.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got hoarder problems.
I'm trying not to. I'm really trying not to, but yeah. It's, I could, like, I'm trying to envision library in my mind, but yeah, the reality is probably closer to hoarder in you know, to someone else.
Yeah. The other thing that's amazing about this archive is they've now really gone and they're trying to make an effort to get all the issues of No Answers, which is Kent's pre Heart Attack zine, which is phenomenal. Like, what a cool zine this was. And yeah, hopefully if people have some of these early issues, they get in touch and put them in touch with them and put it so you can post them on the site, because wow, there's some badass stuff.
Yeah, he's only got three episodes of that episodes. Why do I keep saying that? Issues. And of 10. But nonetheless,
I'm look at this one, though. It's got like Youth of the Day, No For an Answer. And then it's got photos of Bad Brain, COC, Dag Nasty, Raw Power, Rollins Band, Blast, DRI, and more.
Yeah.
It's good. That's a good list. It's a good roster.
I agree.
All right, Chris. Thank you once again, though, for sending that in, and then I guess we should move on to the next email.
All right. Next email is from Mitch B. The subject is Ultimate Hardcore Comp, and it's a very short and sweet email. It just simply states, if you could make a compilation of hardcore punk to help introduce someone to the genre, what would it be? Question mark. So, Dame, that is the question for you.
Wait, give me the question one more time, Chris.
It says, if you could make a compilation of hardcore punk to help
that's introduce what I mean. Someone. Okay, help introduce someone.
Yeah. Okay,
hardcore punk. That's the other thing that I wanted to hear. Yeah. So, what would you want to open that comp with?
Well, I just feel like this is a difficult question nowadays, because I feel like even to a degree, like Bad Brains, Minor Threat, all that's kind of a given, so to speak. So my view is, like, I would be looking for, like, the next layer for somebody. But yeah, if it was just outright, like, someone had never heard aggressive music, thinking, what would I, you know.
Opens with Homies, ends with Bro Him. Some crap in the middle.
Yeah, that would be Damien's 2018 mixtape, maybe, but yeah. definitely Minor Threat has to be on there. I don't know what song.
Wait, you say Minor Threat's more obscure than Bad Brains and Black Flag and stuff?
Well, they're not. No. That's what I mean. Like, I'm avoiding my normal, template for this.
Okay.
I'm just thinking, like, what are all the best first wave singles? And I'd probably put a song from, you know, as many as I could, which you could probably put them all on. But the thing about this question that's funny is I think there are probably already comps that, that sort of just do this.
Yeah, because I would I would take a totally different tack with it. I would like, you know, I'd have extensive liner notes, and then I'd probably kick it off with, you know, this is where the debate comes in. You know, like, what would you put as the first hardcore song ever? And I guess it's like, what's it called? The middle class single. Right, that'd be the first. That's what
Out of Vogue, yeah.
Yeah, Out of Vogue's the general consensus. That's the first hardcore record. I also think, though, you could probably get away with putting on, because I'm from Toronto, the Valtones, and because Chris and I both know the influence they had on the Bad Brains. And
true, yeah.
So I would say that I would put them on my list, too. But, you know, then you probably have Black Flag on there. I want to do stuff that was indicative of like a scene or of an era, and I'd want to cover the whole world, you know, like, so I'd want to have Colliera, and I want to have, I don't know. I'm trying to think, pick the bands from each country as we go, but like, you know, like I'd want to go country to country and kind of represent all of that and kind of tell the story of hardcore punk as this genre that's existed independent of any sort of real mainstream recognition or real mainstream kind of aid throughout the world.
Yeah, I think your approach makes the most sense, but that's an early MRR comp would do that, you know?
Yeah, you're right. Those MRR comps are pretty good, but I want to go like, this would be like a three volume. It would be a box set. I'd have a box set. I'd go right up until kind of the present day, maybe not the present day, like you probably get away with just going up to like the 90s, and you could put you could put in Bikini Kill, and you can kind of tell some Riot Girl stuff in there, and, you know, like show how they all relate and how they all kind of like influence each other and are kind of like responsible for begetting the next era and stuff. Like I think you can tell a great story with the history of hardcore punk.
Yeah, I agree. I'm wondering if this question is more directed at our specific sensibilities. I don't read it that way, but that's the way I read, like in my mind, that's the way I read it, but it's not how it's worded necessarily.
So I would, if I'm just gearing it towards stuff that I like, I'd probably have Feeders open it up with 1984. Then I'd have, you know, like a Melvin song off that, like, Demos record that came out a couple years ago, the double 10 inch thing. I'd have definitely Poison Idea, H100s, you know, Integrity would be there. Cold World would certainly be in the house.
I'm not sure every track I would put on, but for me, the first thing I thought of when I read this was
Cold World.
It would be for Damien, yeah. The first track, like no question, my track one would be Victim in Pain.
Because yeah, you I know think what? That's yeah.
probably.
Yeah.
I'm just relating to myself. If I actually thought about genuinely, like the real first hardcore punk song I heard, I think it was probably that song. If I had to like really think about it, or like one that I considered was indicative of what I consider hardcore punk to be. Probably the first real one I ever heard like that was it. And I think it's still, if not the greatest hardcore punk song, it's certainly, you know, top three. Mm-hmm. So I would, that would be on my number one to open. I don't know, because so much of these comps already do it. Like I would just take, like what I would do if I were to approach this, I would do like a similar to the Year in 7 Inches or something like that and just,
go on, sorry.
No, and just put like basically like the idea of that, like groupings of songs rather than just one-offs, but that's just me.
I would also say, though, there's no comp that does it, right? Like there's no comp that has Black Flag and Agnostic Front on it, right? Like there's no comp that, because everyone's so, at that time, especially like, you know, you're just, your local scene kind of focused. Even the MRR comps, you know, there's no way they're putting any AF songs on anything.
True. Yep.
So like,
yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're right about that. That's true.
So like, you know, like I think to tell the story, you know, you'd kind of have to make a comp now. Like, cause you can kind of look at it with a little bit of hindsight, not hindsight, but it'd be hindsight if you weren't actually there when it happened.
Yeah. You're also embracing, I think the, well, not that I didn't embrace that idea of it, but the part of the phrase here is help introduce someone to the genre. So that's the assumption that they have no knowledge. So therefore that was my thinking on Victim and Pain. But, you know, you could, there's a lot of definitive songs that you could use in that sense that I may not rate as high as some other ones I would rather put on, but would be more indicative to introduce someone, mm-hmm. you know I mean, to the genre.
Mm-hmm. I'd want to tell them, if I was introducing the genre, though, I'd want to tell them the whole story. Maybe that's
I agree.
And then they can pick out their favorite stuff, right? Which would obviously be Burning Spirits Hardcore. Clearly.
Of course.
That's the way it works. And eventually just you're like, oh shit. Okay. Well, this is amazing. This is what the best is.
That is certainly the in vogue opinion, since the last, whatever, 20 years.
Well, like, but, yeah. you take Discharge and you cross it with Motorhead. It's kind of unfuckable with.
I agree. Hey, there's some of those records are absolutely flawless.
Yeah.
I have no debate there.
All right.
We've had this debate on the show, though. I don't know if it's my favorite overall, but it's definitely like can't mess with Wind of Pain.
Have we ever settled what your favorite genre is overall?
What do you mean by genre?
Like if you're going to pick a subgenre of hardcore, like I just said, Burning Spirits hardcore. And like, you know.
You're using that as a. We've had this debate like way back a bit, like that I'm pretty public with saying that it is not my favorite.
Yeah, but what is your favorite? What would that be?
I don't know.
Epiphat.
I just have a very of course.
Amazing Core. Lookout Punk.
My opinion to you or my debate to you earlier was that just for me, being someone from North America, I was more floored, and of course because I heard it earlier, I was more floored by, you know, the first wave of American hardcore and or Canadian hardcore. So for me, those are the most definitive. But I can't argue. There's certain things in that wave of especially Burning Spirit related things that are, they're untouchable and are superior certainly to a lot of records that came out of here in those eras. And a lot of those came out later. So that's even more impressive. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it just depends. Like for me, I don't really care that much like about this debate, to be honest, good's good. I don't care where it's from or when it's from. That's my feeling.
We're not worried about good right now, Chris. We're worried about the best.
Fair enough.
All right. I won't force you to answer this one right now because we all know your answer.
I also say that though, just because I know it's going to get eye rolls from everybody if I say that because it's the answer everyone has. And so I like to be contrary. So my opinion is that it is not my favorite. But of course, I like all the marquee records and the bands are excellent.
So wait, is that more of a contrarian opinion? That's just like,
No, but I genuinely am. Like if you went through my collection of like hitters I own little to no Japanese hitters.
Yeah, that's good.
And a lot of that is acquiring, I'm sure.
Yeah, that's true.
But, you know, if I could have probably acquired some, mm-hmm. you know, here and there, and it just hasn't been at the forefront. Mm-hmm. Now, would I love an original Wind of Pain? Yeah, 100%. Or, you know, would I love the entire Selfish run? Yep, I want it. Hopefully one day I'll get it. But, you know, just it's for me, I think what I'm trying to communicate here is it would be slightly dishonest for me to say that this is definitively my favorite when it's not something that like, you know, a quote unquote, like I live it.
I'm just fucking with you, Chris.
No, I like that this is actually like a public debate right now. It's good because I've said this to a few people and because it's the people we know that are like the most keen that tends to be where they end up and for good reason. But for me, I've not fully arrived there yet is what I would say.
Well, I don't know what genre that we fall into right now with this podcast, whatever genre that is, that's the best genre of punk. Super nerd, late night rambling core.
Yeah.
Next email, I guess.
That's what we had. We only had a news item, and then that was really it. So the news item is a few weeks old now if you wanted to cover it, but if not, we can just roll.
Oh, we can cover it. Why not?
All right. Well, our Norwegian correspondent, Kel, this is as of early June, so we're, about a couple weeks behind on it, but sent in a news item out of France. That the title of the email, or the news item, pardon me, is France's punk rock bank robber walks free after 30 years on the run. And it says Gilles Bertin, lead singer of Camera Silence, was a part of a gang that got away with millions and was subsequently declared dead. And essentially, it seems like from what I can gather of the article, that, there was some criminal activity, and then they sort of went MIA, and I don't know if they faked it or was declared dead, whatever, and then basically is now resurfaced all these years later. And I just want to see here. The jury gave a suspended 5-year sentence, who smiled with relief. So that was as of 2.5 weeks ago. So again, probably the craziest part about the story, if I'm not mistaken, there also was another link to like punk rock. This wasn't a punk rocker robbing banks that I was aware of, or maybe it was, but not a band member anyway, is the infamous one that sort of they talk about in the interview with, what is it? What's that Mystic single? I always mess it up. Battalion of Saints. Don't they mention that in that documentary? Or some fan of those bands up there.
Robbing a bank? I haven't seen that documentary. What documentary? Is there a Battalion of Saints documentary?
No. But like in American Hardcore, they talk about it.
Yeah. Now it's ringing a bell.
There's a brief mention. And then there was another mention because I think there are a few groups of that era, if not the entire West Coast or just the Pacific Northwest Coast, that had knowledge of this human being. I don't know anything about them or what they, but apparently it was another bank robber. So it's kind of funny that there's
also Ronnie, from the Sex Pistols.
What's that one?
What's the Paul Cook, Steve Jones, the famous British bank robber that did the record with those guys?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know that one.
It's the one that they based the movie on, too. People are like screaming at their cell phones right now.
On this one.
I'm going to call it up right now. It's. Yeah. Man, the Sex Pistols have a lot of records considering they only put out one record.
But aren't you looking for...
Ronnie Biggs. That's it. Ronnie Biggs.
Ronnie Biggs. Okay.
No One Is Innocent. And then there's... And
What is it? A Sex Pistols record? Or is it a...
Yeah, it's a Sex Pistols record.
And it's like an official, single or something? Or
yeah, actual? It's like... It's My Way's on the flip side of it.
Oh, weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know this one.
And if you call up the 12-inch and look at the 12-inch, I'm sure you'd recognize that art.
I'm still trying to find it on here, but I'll look it up. But, anyway, there is a history of this, apparently, in punk, I guess. But
Well, also our friend MVP.
Yeah, I don't know anything about that, but...
Episode?
I have, but I mean, I don't know beyond what was mentioned by you, or I can't.
He robbed a casino boat with shotguns when he was 16.
Wow.
Got away with.
I don't know if that was mentioned. I remember there was. Yeah. Anyway, I now know this single now that I look at it. Yeah. But I got to get this. I like that My Way covers on the B side. That's awesome. Oh, it's the A side. Pardon me. The other one's the B side.
Yeah, the other one's the B side. I guess it would have been kind of controversial, right? Because, he was a controversial figure right until his death in England.
You know what's super funny is on the center labels, at least of the, I don't know if it's 12-inch or 7-inch I'm looking at, I'm thinking it's 7. They're both labeled as A-side, so who knows?
Double A-side. Yeah, both of those are hits. Both of those should be on the charts.
It's a good record. There are a ton of versions of this record, too. Nice.
Yeah, no, it's definitely like one of those records where you probably buy it and you're like, did I really need this?
Nonetheless, while we're on this, I just want to shout out our Norwegian correspondent for always sending in great stuff.
Yes, thank you,
Kel. And of course, Camera Salens is an interesting band to check out if you don't know them. And just a very footnote email of all footnote emails.
I like, it would be interesting to come up, well, actually, no, when, I'm like already regretting it, saying it as soon as the words leave my lips. the most infamous punk crimes list, but I don't really think we should be revisiting a lot of those. They're not really glamorous or anything.
No, we're good. Someone must have done it already, too, I would think.
Well, we're in the era of those podcasts, so.
I don't mean that. I just mean like a mixtape or whatever. Something like that.
The most infamous punk bands? Like,
yeah, or was, you know, whatever like that, yeah.
Bad music by bad people? Or good music by bad people?
You're just giving everyone the ideas. You got to do this yourself.
Chris, I need ideas that pay money.
Well, fair enough.
I need ideas that pay me in records.
And there you go.
I need ideas that bring me back to Japan and pay me in records.
Nice. All right. Regardless, that was the mailbag, so we're good.
All right, we have emptied the mailbag for this week. Please, once again, Chris, how do they send emails to us?
To us, you can send them to turnedoutapunkfootnotes@gmail.com.
Make your ultimate punk compilation list. Send that in. We'll go through it. It better include Brohim, or at least homies. and send another stuff. Like we love conversating on these sorts of topics.
Yeah, all of these kind of things that we've discussed are great examples. But yeah, there's always something out there.
Speaking of something out there for us right now, Chris, is one of my favorite all-time episodes of Turnout of Punk.
I was able to finally hear it recently, which I'm very happy about. And yeah, I enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it. Go on.
There was a lot of rap content that I'm a fan of, so it was that was refreshing.
Mm-hmm. I also kind of love it because it's like, you know, and I put a post on Instagram about this too. It's cool to have Matt Jackson and Fat Tony a week later because the two of them are, you know, have the similarity in the sense that you have two kids having to discover punk rock in isolation, but for very different reasons, but also both in the state of Texas.
Yeah, I think I agree with you that is an interesting trajectory for both those people, but I think for a lot of people it's a very similar one that aren't, you know, born in these hotbeds or live in these hotbeds more appropriately.
Yeah, like, I don't know, like, maybe I'm wrong, but like discovering it while you're by yourself playing football by throwing the football on the roof of the house and letting it roll down to catch it, you know, or and then also discovering it because none of your peers are into it. You know, which a lot of us can relate to, but like, I mean, like none of your peers can, you know, even have a relationship to, or have a relationship to it. Like you want to have a relationship to it.
Well, anytime that, you know, what we're discussing, like that idea of gravitating to something that isn't a, you know, like you don't have a lot of peers or isn't like a particularly popular thing. Yeah. It you know, it obviously showcases that it's something that, you know, someone genuinely cares about for whatever reason, right? So that I like that, and I can relate to it. Mm-hmm. And I can relate to the idea of, you know, I've never been in a heavily populated area that was particularly hip, so I relate to that idea too of, you know, the as the saying goes, having to dig the well. I very much remember those years, especially before the internet existed in the way we have it now, where, you know, things were not easily accessible, which we constantly, you know, moan about. But yeah, I don't know. Yeah, great episode. Like, I thought the interview was really good. I don't know anything about his music, sadly, but it was cool to hear the way he came into it.
Oh, you gotta check out his music. I think if any, you know, knowing the type of rap music you'd like, I think you're really gonna dig what he does.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, everything he was dropping, like, I didn't like everything he dropped, but it was, you know, for the most part, he was spot on for me.
Yeah, no, he definitely is someone who put out like a huge variety of cool stuff over the years, and someone who's got like a really cool, unique perspective. He's like one best local rapper, according to like the Houston Weekly type thing, like 3 years in a row.
Huh, nice.
Like, it's like, he is definitely, you know, someone that is very respected for what he does, and someone that I'm a big fan of. So, yeah, getting the chance to sit down and talk to him, you know, because I had no idea he was that into punk until the conversation really got going.
Well, yeah, it's very funny when, like, you could tell he was interested in it, but then when if we're going to jump to talking points, the thing that I was most amused by and also intrigued by simultaneously was the idea of that, just putting on that Erg show as like one of the first things.
The best story. Which I love is a that great story. So much. But that like speaks to like how much, you know, like you want to be involved. Like you want to do this, right? Like punk is almost demanding of you that you do this, that you help out, that you find a way. And like, you know, from the sounds of it, Tony just like loved this music and wanted to contribute. But like, I can relate. Definitely can relate when you think you're doing a great job putting the show together, and then the show comes and there's, you know, luckily more than 5 people there, but still like no one there.
The other thing I found funny about that is from a band perspective, of which I do not have as much experience as you do, but those shows always happen.
Oh, those like, shows always happen.
Yeah. Everyone in a band has experienced that show in this kind of capacity, I would say. And so just very funny. I don't know.
I'm just so happy that I know a couple people from the Ergs, and I can now relate this story to them and and make this connection re-happen. I like it. There's something about this show and connecting people, you know, like reconnecting people again after all these years. You know, the aforementioned MVP was Zach Blair, or now Fat Tony with the Ergs.
If you do that and even more comes out, it would be even funnier. But yeah, it's cool anyway. It's just a cool story. But you're right. That exuberance of youth wanting to just do anything to make it happen or whatever and see it or be a part of it. Yeah, that's, you know, very relatable when you're interested at the get-go.
What was the first show you ever did? Did you put on a show?
The only show I think I've ever put on was not early on. I don't think I've ever put on another show beyond this one, weirdly enough. And it was not early on, but it was a Crew Suicide show. So it doesn't really paint the same picture as what we're describing. But yeah, I never did the early show thing because there was nowhere to really do it here. Like there was, you know, it wasn't that kind of a vibe. And I never thought, like, I never had the money to pay people. I just always thought, like, okay, well, I couldn't do that because I have no money. But, yeah.
I'm, one time I put on a going away party for myself. originally, 97A was supposed to play, but Mike didn't book him to play in the end. I forget why they couldn't play. I always blame Mike, but I don't think it was really his fault. And, so 97A was supposed to play, but they didn't. So it ended up being overtime. And I can't remember. It might have been a girl named Conspiracy. I'm trying to remember the band that we borrowed all the gear of. And then we just went downstairs and played a show for ourselves. And then they went downstairs and played a show for themselves on their own gear. And that was the show.
See, that's more in the tradition of what we're touching on. Yeah. Mine was just, you know, like they needed to come. They had some whatever they needed to show between. I don't know. I think going across the border, and so we just did one here on the way. But yeah, it was a different capacity.
Mike and I had this other band called Don Louis that was pre. Mike did so many shows that no one came to. Like there's like a spectacular run of shows. But I remember this one was Don Louis. One of our only shows was opening for Panthro UK United 13. Do you remember that band?
No.
They were on No Idea. The kind of like
kind of like Hot Water Music-y vibe kind of stuff. Okay. Like, not saying they sound like Hot Water Music, but if I was going to, like, put them next to a band, that's where I would put them. Yeah. Anyway, I think three people paid.
See, the funny thing, though, like, in hindsight, these stories are funny, and you always, like, not always, but, you know, you people tend to have these ones. But from what I remember of the Mike shows when I first started to be aware of them, I think the ones that he was still doing, like it's the, you know, it's the journey. Like, yeah, these things you're talking about happened, but, you know, I remember him doing excellent shows later. So,
well, and know. These were like, you know, it's not Mike's fault that no one knew about Darkest Hour, and then no one knew about, yo, how's this for a show? I think it was, it was a precursor Suicide Band. So it, I think it was, fuck, what were
Board
they?
Board of Education or
I think it was, Jonah, I think it was Board of Education, Submission Hold, and Darkest Hour in the basement of Who's That.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. Might have been five people.
Yeah, but yeah, those were weird years though. Like, if you're getting those bands at that time.
Oh, absolutely. Like, that's like Darkest Hour now is, you know, legitimately respected amongst heavy metal fans kind of the world over. But at that point, they were just like a DIY hardcore band playing a DIY all ages based on a weeknight.
Yeah, they were road heavy then too. Like, I saw them in my area, which is what's like when bands came through. I don't think it was as early as what you're discussing, but not long thereafter.
Yeah, this would have been like 98, I think, 99.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it might have been the same tour, but either way, if you're getting that in these years, I mean, that's that's insane. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. if you're playing where I live anyway, in these years where it wasn't popping off at all, yeah. That's like some serious commitment.
Yeah, no, and it was. And it was, and there were a lot of shows like that. So I never mailed flyers, though. I think that's like, you must have spent a fucking fortune in postage.
Yeah, that would be, and that's even funnier because, again, when you don't. Like, it's the, yeah, that wasn't wise. It was wise, it was clever, but it wasn't wise, if that makes any sense.
It was awesome, but it's just like, you know, it's just like, yeah, like, how do you get this information to people? Like, if you don't know that all these people are going to go to a record store, you don't know where all these friends are going to be, you know, why not mail them a flyer?
True.
And I got to say, if I had a flyer show up in the middle of summer at my house, you goddamn right I would have been to that show.
You would have been for sure.
Yeah, Fat Tony, you would have had six people at your show. But it was, yeah, like that definitely is my favorite first or second show, first punk show experience story.
It is. It's quite good. And I just like that, you know, when he was beginning to talk about it, I thought, oh, this is okay. And then it, you know, it goes south as far as what happens. Which is also very relatable, but it has all the check marks of the first awkward experiences when you get into these sorts of weird things.
Yeah, no, definitely. And what about the first show being MF Doom?
Yeah, that's kind of wild because I didn't realize, but I was opening for Talib Kweli, he says, right? I think,
yeah,
if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's pretty to see that as your first, like, you know, like. Rap like hip hop show too. It's kind of wild. Like, that's actually a good band too. Especially in those years. Like, if it's the era I believe he's speaking of. Yeah, I don't. It's very cool, but it's a strange choice that of all the things in the world you would catch first would be that. But it's cool as hell. Mm-hmm. I've still never seen Doom live ever in any capacity.
Yeah, like I've never, oh, that's not true. I did see him live, but I'm pretty sure it was a fake Doom.
I love that too, by the way.
Yeah, no, it was a concept. It's pretty awesome until you're seeing it.
Yeah, but I like that carries on in traditions of groups who've done. So like you take like Man or Astro Man or Doom, or I'm sure there's a few others that I can't think of, but that do that, like, is it really the band, or we're putting the clone band up, or that concept is funny. It's funny that there hasn't been one of those in a while.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, it's weird. It's like, it's due.
It is due, yes. I think the problem now is, you know, for the most part, people don't make enough money to have a clone band anymore or whatever.
I think the thing is, you know, people do make so much money, but like the thing is, like, you're so exposed on your Instagram. Maybe that guy Marshmello. You got to figure that dude's not doing everything in his gigs right now.
I don't know. On that one, I don't know.
You know Marshmello, who came in like second place in the Fortnite World Championships?
No, I do not.
He got beaten by Ninja, I think.
Okay. I don't know. Why do you know this? How do you expect me to know this?
Chris, because I'm trying desperately to stay in touch with the youth.
Do you know this because of your children?
No, they don't even know about this stuff. I'm just trying to stay one step ahead of them.
That's even funnier.
Yeah.
You say he lost to Ninja, are you speaking of, like, is this a screen name of somebody? Like, I should know who this is?
Well, I think Marshmello is, like, famous as a DJ.
Okay, I don't know offhand.
Marshmello. Okay. Yeah, Marshmello. And then, like, Alone is the big hit. And then
do not know this. Okay.
Silence, which also features Khaled.
Wow. Okay. So, okay. He's on that level then. But yeah, I don't know this. No.
I'm going to listen to this song. Oh, there's an ad. 3, 2, 1. Well, Chris, you obviously are not one of the 874 million plays that this thing has had.
Yeah, clearly.
Wow.
All right, where do we go?
It's just like shit house. It's like shitty house music.
Okay.
Yeah, but this guy wears a mask. Have you seen this guy?
Well, I'll look him up now, but no, I'm not familiar with this.
Okay. Well, it is actually not too bad. Oh, and also that performer, Sia. You know?
Yeah, I'm familiar with that. That's
someone else. Come in and be Sia fake. You could be like, Sia. There's no way Sia has to be Sia performing. Well, maybe Sia's revealed her face now. Because, like, I'm looking now and there's, like, a lot of face shots on Instagram. On YouTube, I should say.
I don't know. You got me there too. I definitely don't know. I've never seen Marshmello.
The whole gimmick with Sia used to cover her face the whole time.
I think. Yeah, it's the only photos I ever saw was some with their hair and their face, and it just looked strange.
Yeah.
That's why I committed it to memory.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's move on to the next point.
But yeah, masked groups with people, whatever, as their imposters or groups, like clone groups, is definitely a long due concept.
It's a dream. It's a dream for me.
What point did you want to go on next? Was that you or me? I don't know.
you were in a clone band in the video.
That is true. That did happen once. Yeah, good point.
You are
in bring it around.
Yeah, you're in a hit Much Music video, Chris.
I don't know if that's...
One of us was in a number one Much Music countdown video, and it's not me.
I don't know if it was it?
I think it was. I think that was a popular, that was the beginning of like the, you know, that wasn't the beginning. That was like the third video. They had three incredibly strong videos in a row.
Yeah. I don't
like Sunfires, who we're talking about.
I don't remember where they ranked, but yeah.
The first one was, oh no, they had four, five. All the early videos are crazy. It's like first video was them playing in that room, and it just is like a tracking shot through the hallway.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a great video. Mm-hmm. Second video was them playing on Toronto Island with a bunch of kids.
I don't think you're correct there, but I could be wrong.
And then it was the gang video.
There's a gang video I was in, and then there's a one that you're talking about.
You're in the gang video too?
Yeah, and there's a clone band video one, and that one I'm into.
Yeah, and then there's also the ambulance video.
Yeah, I'm not in that one. That's actually, if I were to actually say the first one is, this is a huge digression, but the first video is very good and kind of iconic in retrospect. I don't remember what that song's called, but yeah, the ambulance one is great. I genuinely think that is like a really great video. I think that's my favorite video they made too, if I'm remembering them all.
I liked it because it was like a Little Rascals episode where the little kids get like in the fire truck and drive the fire truck. They did not.
One, I think,
they didn't look old enough to be driving an ambulance.
No, but I think it was only, isn't it mainly George, or are they all in it? I can't remember.
I think they're all, George and Wade are both in the ambulance.
Okay, I have a bad recollection of it, but yeah, they probably are. I just remember vividly our lovely friend George in it for the most part. But
I think your video you're in is better than that video.
I don't have any opinion. I'm in it. I don't care. Like, doesn't matter to me.
It's a funny ass video. It's a really funny video.
Like, they're fun.
There's that scene where you go up to Dallas and you pat him on the shoulder.
Yeah, true.
And you're trying to eat like him.
This is true. And it's you know, punk footnote. Yeah, I'm wearing a Career Suicide shirt.
Yeah, you got Career Suicide on Much Music. There, congratulations. Just like your fucking Heart Attack cover, you got Career Suicide on Much Music before you got fucked up on Much Music.
Well, I will tell you, I didn't thoroughly think about it. I just happened to wear that shirt. But I recall your t-shirt being worn prominently by a future band member of Fucked Up in a, what was that? I want to say it was either
100 Million, the Trouble Charge video.
Okay, I was going to say it was an Avril video, but I think she's in it. But
Avril Lavigne's in it. Like, that is like truly one of the most iconic videos of our time. That video features members of Gob, members of Swollen Member,
yes,
Avril Lavigne, and members of Sum 41.
And Ben, who's the only one that matters in that
and
whole
Ben.
List. But yeah.
And Damien eating craft services.
You're in that video?
No, I didn't. I don't.
Oh, you were just behind. Okay.
You might see my back of my head because I think we went out to be in front of the camera for like 1 second before we went back to the band holding area and ate more craft services.
Okay. Either way, yeah.
Yeah, because we were with Ben, we treated ourselves like we were all on camera that day. We did not hang out with the rest of the extras.
No.
No, no. But it was cool. I met Avril Lavigne that day.
Nice.
I met her again a couple years ago at the Much Music Video Awards. Shocker, did not remember.
She didn't. You mentioned you'd met, and
yeah, I'm like, she didn't remember. Yeah, she's like, nice to meet
you.
Like,
remember. Oh.
No, I definitely remembered. No, yeah. She did not remember. Like, I met you at a Trouble Charger video like 10 years before this. Anyway.
What is your point?
I don't
next
know,
talking
Chris.
Point on this issue.
I don't know where's my talking point. I'm high. You're the one who's meant to be the ship on course. I'm the one who's meant to
I'm trying.
You're the play by play. I'm the color man.
What was I gonna mention here? I don't have any idea who 30 Foot Fall is. I found it very amusing that you were so keen on it. I don't know
what it is. Why? You never heard Kids of Junior High Unite?
No.
Do you know the Punk Bites comp, Chris?
The name sounds vaguely familiar, but I don't remember. I'll look it up right now.
Yeah. And here's also, this is going to lead to another major digression, but our mutual friend, Maddie Matheson, is the person that finally gave me the 7-inch of this song. When I went to his house,
really?
For some fucking reason, he had this 7-inch.
Hmm.
This like 7-inch that was limited to 500 copies that came out like years ago it came out, I think there's 1,000 copies, came out in Texas. Maddie, for some reason, has a copy of it.
Nice. Well, this comp, I vaguely remember the cover of, but no, I never had this.
Oh, this song's fucking awesome.
But yeah, I see the song now that you're referring to. I don't know it though, and nor do I know this band.
Okay.
So it is very amusing how keen on that you were.
I love this song so much. Like, it is like really, when I think back to, you know, and I got some other 30 Foot Fall records when I was younger. I don't know if they were quite.
Do you have that 7-inch or you just said you did? Pardon me.
Yeah, Maddie gave me the 7-inch finally.
Yeah, yeah, that one.
And I was grateful. That was also the same day, Chris, that at Maddie's house, he's like, yeah, I'm thinking of selling all my records. And I'm like, oh, yeah? Like, he's like, and he was like telling me how much he was going to get for them. And I'm like, I bet you I can pull out more than that right now in your record collection. And he's like, oh, yeah? And then that first thing I pull out, 24-hour Party People Test Press.
Wow.
The Happy Mondays band, you know, yeah, Happy Mondays single. Test Press of the 7-inch.
Huh.
It's like a $250 record. I'm like, how the, where'd you get this? He's like, I don't know. I'm like, what? Like how only he, right? And then the next record I pull is the 30 Foot Fall 7-inch and stuff.
What a pairing.
I know, I'm like, what the hell's up with your record collection? It's crazy. So, yeah, I convinced him not to sell his records for then. He might have sold them since then.
The tracks on this are wild, like on this 7-inch.
Yeah, the 7-inch titles. Yeah, there's some pretty ridiculous songs. I'm not saying I ride for every 30 Foot Fall song or decision.
Yeah.
But I definitely do ride for Junior High Sucked.
I'll tell you what else sucks, the cover art.
Cover art is the worst.
Yeah.
The cover art is like, it's like Unwritten Law. Where you're going.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, exactly. That is a metric which this show has now officially made official.
But like the difference is this is on like a DIY label, you know.
Yeah.
If it was on a major label and it was Unwritten Law bad, then I would be like, okay. I really want to get the first 7-inch of this band too.
This 30 Foot Fall band, yeah.
Yeah, the very first one. This might be a hard one to track down.
Yeah. I think it's funny that they're both themed based on school issues.
Yeah, well. I think that's why I rode so hard for this single, because I was just finished junior high. And I was like, yeah, it did suck.
Oh, boy. All right. So 30 Foot Fall. What else do we want to touch on here? What do you got?
One second. I was trying to find 30 Foot Fall on YouTube, but I will close that window.
okay.
I kind of also wanted to talk about MERS. Were you a fan of MERS?
Remember the name vaguely. I probably heard some of it in passing, but no, I never specifically got into it. I was actually just trying to look that up because I'm just trying to remember some of these records.
I got it in kind of like when I was going through the MERS discography. I thought I was in way earlier than I was. MERS, of course, stands for Making Underground Raw Shit. And but I got in on that End of the Beginning record.
Same with me. That's the only one I really know. And I think maybe
Murray's Revenge, the one with Ninth Wonder and Sweet Lord, is are pretty awesome. MERS for President, I remember.
There's a lot of stuff looking at this now I'm like I would have been into. But yeah, I never really... That the End of the Beginning, like you, is I think a record I probably heard at least something off because I remember that cover. But the Ninth Wonder is cool. I like Ninth Wonder, so that would be a record I want to hear.
Yeah, no, the MERS, the End of the Beginning, I love when this came out. I was a huge fan of this record. It had some amazing guest spots on it. But probably the one that was the most exciting for me was Humpty Hump and Shock G being on Risky Business.
Yes. Yeah. Man, he's got a lot of stuff. Holy, I never realized how extensive his catalog was.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of Ninth Wonder collaborations. Okay.
And that song, The Dance, the one with LP, is one of my favorite LP productions.
It's kind of... Now I kind of see what Fat Tony was talking about, like in terms of like him being a definitive rapper at the time for him.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I just remembered, I thought he had 1-2 records maybe. I'm looking at this now, I'm like, holy. But I, yeah, And it's probably because of Def Jux I knew of this one even. But yeah, I don't. I never, never really immersed myself in this.
Yeah, no, it's definitely something that requires a much deeper dive than I've done, and that's one of the great things that we live in this era now, where I can do that tomorrow. You know, and it won't require me spending hundreds and hundreds of dollars in CDs. You know, it's like amazing now. I'm finally appreciating, you know, what it's like to have all this information at your fingertips. And yes, I'm an artist and I realize that's the death of my industry. But at the same time, it is really fun to sit there and make yourself playlists and like do deep dives on artists' careers as you steal money out of their pockets and force them into early retirement.
Yeah, I know what you're I'm not on any of the streaming services you refer to, but I do know what you're saying. Yes, it is a luxury that I just think, like, because, yeah, the only way you're going to experience a lot of the stuff is via that now, if we're being real.
Yeah, and it happens, like, but it's very weird, right? Like, it's a weird thing to kind of have at your disposal, because, like, if you want to check out something that you don't even like, right, you just, like, want to check it out to see what it's about. You're monetizing that for that artist, right? So I don't know. It's a weird thing, because everything you do on there, you know, ultimately that's how these artists are going to get paid off it. So I don't know. That being said, like, you know, for every Tekashi 6ix9ine track that I listen to just to check out what it's like, I'm also able to do deep dives on other people and stuff like that. So, you know, and Chris, you're missing out on the Trinidad Punk playlist.
For the time being, I've seen them, like, whatever, like, yeah, I've seen them amongst you guys talking about them, but yeah, you're right, I have not experienced them in real time, if you will.
You would be very up to date with all these artists now. I couldn't find Blackie, who's the artist that he also refers to, that was a huge influence on him, and then someone else has hit me up subsequently in a comment on one of my posts about the show and was like, oh, Blackie's amazing, and I'm trying to find information about him and I can't find anything. So I'm going to try and get some more information, then maybe we'll have that in a future footnotes episode, because sounds like a really, you know, awesome performer. And
yeah, no, I don't know that either. Yeah. We need to check out.
Yeah. Anyway, your point, Chris.
Well, let me see if there was anything left that I had to unearth here. The atmosphere and MERS thing, coincidentally, both those I'm not, I've heard things in passing, but never a great amount. What else? The Bikini Kill Love, I was very, like, completely blindsided by, but it was very into. And it's playing on a, so they played on a softball team with Kate Hanna?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Pretty awesome.
But the, I don't know. I'm good. Like, there's some other points. Like, you mentioned the Jawbreaker thing or Tribe Called Quest. Like, there's little hallmarks, but there's nothing that jumps out to me unless you had something you want to go on.
No, I think we can call it a night. This has been a pretty long episode already as is. I do think that, you know, the Jawbreaker thing is indicative of, like, what kind of music head Fat Tony is, that he's like, you know, the Turnetta Punk, the exact Turnetta Punk kind of fan we want, you know, which is a deep head. You know, someone that really loves this music and is prepared to, like, you know, I don't know. I'm very excited that this episode got to happen, because he's someone that I'm a big fan of for a long time.
Well, I just think, yeah, I think this is kind of your bread and butter as far as unearthing people that, and again, it's not a passing interest. Like, it's a very engaged interest, which is revealed amongst that interview. So, yeah, it was cool to hear.
Yeah, no, he's definitely like someone who's a deep head and yeah, someone that I can't wait to have back on the show to talk about more. Because he's been sending me, like, other stuff, like Porch of the Past. He's like, oh, I forgot to talk about these guys. It's like, man, like, where were you deep diving for information about music? Like, it seems like definitely, like, real wide-ranging kind of interests and influences, especially in the punk rock sphere. So Fat Tony will be on again. I also got to say, though, Chris, I don't know if I've been telling you, but I've been kind of, like, I guess cheating on you is the best way to put it. I've been on a co-host on another podcast, my good friend and friend of Turned Out of Punk MVP's podcast. I was helping him out co-host for the last few weeks. Well, he has decided to wrap that podcast up and call it a day.
Okay.
So
why is that?
He wants to take a break from it for a while and,
Yeah, fair enough.
And maybe figure out some new options for what he's going to do with the podcast, if he wants to do another podcast, you know. But we did one last final episode, and I strongly recommend you check it out. Santino Morella's on it. Grado from the infamous Scottish wrestler documentary that Vice put out way back when. And also Tribe Called Red's there as well. And it's and myself, of course, and it's a fun hang. And yes, thank you to MVP for including me in the last few episodes of the show. It was an honor to get to be on that because I love that podcast, you know, and I had a real fun time getting to be part of it towards the end. But check out this last final episode.
Yeah, cool. I'll check it out.
And is there anything else, Chris?
Not for me. I'm good.
All right. And how do they get in touch with us here again?
TurnedOutOfPunkFootnotes@gmail.com.
All right. Well, I was celebrating legalization because legalization passed today. I got a couple dabs in there, and we went some weird places tonight, Chris. This is a weird one.
It's okay. Yeah.
All right. You can find me on various forms of social media at Left4Damien, and I will see you next week.